content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. But this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Now, the library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well, both digital and cassette. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. And if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that as well at the end of the program. Now, this month, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out during the month of January 2016 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. We are going to begin this program with a look at The Guilty by the very popular author David Baldacci. Here's the summary. Will Roby escaped his small Gulf Coast hometown of Cantrell, Mississippi, after high school, severing all personal ties, and never looked back, not once. At least not until the unimaginable occurs. His father, Dan Roby, has been arrested and charged with murder. Now, father and son haven't spoken or even seen each other since the day Roby left town. In that time, Dan Roby, a local attorney and pillar of the community, has been elected town judge. Despite this, most of Cantrell is aligned against Dan. His guilt is assumed. To make matters worse, Dan has refused to do anything to defend himself. When Roby tries to help, his father responds only with anger and defiance. Could Dan really be guilty? When the equally formidable Jessica Reel at his side, Roby ignores his father's wishes and begins his own desperate investigation into the case. But Roby is now a stranger to his hometown, an outsider, a man who has forsaken his past and his family. His attempts to save his father are met with distrust and skepticism and violence. Unlike the missions Roby undertook in the service of his country, where his target was clearly defined, digging into his father's case only reveals more questions. Roby is drawn into the hidden underside of Cantrell, where he must face the unexpected and possibly deadly consequences of the long-ago choices made by father and son. And this time, there may be no escape for either of them. The book is called The Guilty, and it's by David Baldacci. The next book we're going to take a look at on this program is called The Wrong Man, and it's a novel of suspense by Kate White. Now, Kate White, by the way, is the former editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan magazine, and she is the New York Times best-selling author of 6 Bailey Wiggins mysteries, as well as 4 standalone novels of suspense, including The Wrong Man. She wanted to be more daring. But one small risk is about to cost her everything, maybe even her life. Bold and adventurous in her work as owner of one of Manhattan's boutique interior design firms, Kit Finn couldn't be tamer in her personal life. While on vacation in the Florida Keys, Kit resolves to do something risky for once. When she literally bumps into a charming stranger at a hotel, she decides to make good on her promise and act on her attraction. But back in New York, when Kit arrives at his luxury apartment, ready to pick up where they left off in the Keys, she doesn't recognize the man standing on the other side of the door. Was this a cruel joke or part of something truly sinister? Kit soon realizes that she's been thrown into a treacherous plot. which is both deeper and deadlier than she could have ever imagined. Now the only way to protect herself, her business, and the people she loves is to find out the true identity of the man who has turned her life upside down. Adrenaline-charged and filled with harrowing twists at every turn, the wrong man will keep readers riveted until the final page. And that was a summary of The Wrong Man, a novel of suspense by Kate White. Now we're going to move on to the most popular book at the North Carolina Library for the Blind in the month of January. It was also one of the most popular in the month of December, by the way. It's The Rogue Lawyer by John Grisham. Many best-selling writers appear to be willing to avoid taking controversial stands on contemporary social issues. However, Grisham seems to relish attacking the perceived ills of society as the basis for many of his legal-themed novels. Through decades of bestsellers, he has attacked the death penalty, unethical lawyers, the vice of money in judicial campaigns, and numerous other problems of the American justice system. In his latest effort, he has ratcheted up his displeasure to a new level. This time, he takes on steroids. For Grisham, justice is no longer an element of American criminal law. Attorney Sebastian Rudd is the lens through which readers will examine the criminal justice system, and it will not be a complimentary portrait. Rudd is a unique character, a solo practitioner who does not even have a law office. His vehicle, a large Ford cargo van, serves as his office, which past events justifies. Rudd has a legion of enemies, both former clients and police officers, who have seen their professional lives heavily damaged by his take-no-prisoners approach to trials. He has avoided a permanent office ever since his last one was firebombed by an arsonist who was never apprehended. His legal team primarily consists of his driver bodyguard partner, who Rudd describes as his only friend. Their bond was sealed when partner represented by Rudd was found not guilty of the murder of an undercover narcotics officer. Like Humphrey Bogart and Claude Rains in Casablanca, it was the beginning of a beautiful friendship. Well, Grisham has multiple targets in his criticism of the criminal justice process. He has chosen to present his case using an episodic format. The result is a series of short novellas, with Rudd's battles with police, prosecutors, and judges being the overarching theme, binding them together. Now, in the first such episode, readers are introduced to Rudd as he defends his client against a capital murder charge. The crime, which involved the murder of two young girls, was heinous and brutal. The public is outraged, and the media frenzy is enormous. There's just one problem. Rudd's client is innocent. For years, Grisham has been a vocal opponent of the death penalty, writing and speaking of its tragic shortcomings. The number of death penalty cases where convicted defendants are actually innocent is astoundingly large. Why? Grisham makes it very clear. If a prosecutor gets caught cheating, he either gets reelected or elevated to the bench. Our system never holds a bad prosecutor accountable. As Rudd struggles to prove his client's innocence, we learn an important fact. Rudd has no qualms about fighting as dirty and unfairly as circumstances warrant. The only way to fight evil is with equal amounts of evil. Now, the second case focuses on the militarization of police departments across America. Doug Renfro, an average suburban homeowner, is awakened one night to the sound of intruders. He grabs for his gun and shots are exchanged. The result? Renfro is seriously wounded, and his wife is killed. The intruders are the local police department's SWAT team, invading Renfro's home because they believed he is involved in the illegal side of prescription drugs. Now, they are wrong, incredibly wrong, but double down and they charge Renfro under a state law that does not allow a citizen to fire at police officers, even if the officers improperly invade his or her home. As Grisham describes this case, his anger jumps off the pages. Why didn't the police just ring the doorbell during the day and ask some questions? The answer is simple. These guys think they are part of an extreme elite force, and they need their thrills. There are further examples of injustice in the remaining chapters. This is an angry and perplexing book that raises numerous questions while leaving just as many unanswered. Sebastian Rudd is a fighter for justice, but to achieve a just result, he often resorts to injustice and illegality of his own. You can certainly read Rogue Lawyer as an entertaining legal thriller, but in fairness, you should ponder the important questions it asks about America's criminal justice system. John Grisham would expect nothing less. That's Rogue Lawyer by John Grisham. As I mentioned, that was the most popular book at the North Carolina Library for the Blind during the month of January and was also in the top 10 in December of 2015. Now let's listen to some information about A Code of Conduct by Brad Thor. Number one New York Times bestselling author Brad Thor presents his greatest thriller ever, many say, an action-packed literary tour de force. Here's the summary. Hidden deep within one of the world's most powerful organizations is a secret committee with a devastating agenda. Its members are afforded incredible protections, considered elites, untouchables. But when 4 seconds of video is captured halfway around the world and anonymously transmitted to D.C., covert wheels are set in motion, and counterterrorism operative Scott Harvath is tapped to undertake the deadliest assignment of his career. What begins as a favor will evolve into a globe-spanning drama of high personal stakes, played out against a backdrop of stunning international intrigue, duplicitous political gamesmanship, and the darkest, most clandestine fears of the espionage world. With razor-sharp plotting, richly rendered characters, and heart-stopping surprises on every page, Thor isn't just at the top of his game, he owns the entire genre. Sounds like quite a book. Code of Conduct by Brad Thor. Now from John Grisham to another big name in the publishing world, James Patterson. We're going to talk about a very popular book during the month of January at the North Carolina Library for the Blind, Cross Justice, it's called, by James Patterson. The toughest cases hit closest to home. Alex Cross left his hometown and some awful family tragedies for a better life with Nana Mama in Washington, D.C. He has not looked back. Now his cousin Stefan has been accused of a horrible, unthinkable murder, and Cross drives south with Bree, Nana Mama, Janny, and Ollie to Starksville, North Carolina for the first time in 35 years. Back home, he discovers a once proud community down on its luck and local residents who don't welcome him with open arms. As Cross steps into his family home, the horrors of his childhood flood back, and he learns that they're not really over. He brings all his skill to finding out the truth about his cousin's case. But truth is hard to come by in a town where no one feels safe to speak. Chasing his ghosts takes Cross all the way down to the sugarcane fields of Florida, where he gets pulled into a case that has local cops needing his kind of expertise, a string of socialite murders with ever more grisly settings. He's chasing too many loose ends, a brutal killer, the truth about his own past, and justice for his cousin, and any one of the answers might be fatal. In Cross Justice, Alex Cross confronts the deadliest and most personal case of his career. It's a propulsive, edge-of-your-seat thrill ride that proves you can go home again, but it just might kill you. And that is Cross Justice by James Patterson. Another popular author now, Devoted in Death by J.D. Robb. Here's a summary for Devoted in Death. Eve Dallas tracks a couple whose passion is fueled by cold brutality in the newest crime thriller from the number one New York Times bestseller author of Obsession in Death and Festive in Death. When Lieutenant Eve Dallas examines a body in a downtown Manhattan alleyway, the victim's injuries are so extensive that she almost misses the clue. Carved into the skin is the shape of a heart and initials inside reading E and D. Ella Lou and her boyfriend Daryl had been separated while Daryl was a guest of the state of Oklahoma, and now that his sentence has been served, they don't ever intend to part again. Ella Lou's got dreams, and Daryl believes there are better ways to achieve your dreams than working for them. So they hit the road, and when their car breaks down in Arkansas, they make plans to take someone else's. Then things get messy, and they wind up killing someone. An experience that stokes a fierce, wild desire in Ella Lou, a desire for Daryl, and a desire to kill again. As they cross state lines on their way to New York to find the life they think they deserve, they will leave a trail of evil behind them. But now they've landed in the jurisdiction of Lieutenant Dallas and her team at the New York Police and Security Department. And with her husband Rourke at her side, she has every intention of hunting them down and giving them what they truly deserve. That book is entitled Devoted in Death. It sounds like a real thriller, and it's by the very popular author, J.D. Robb. And our next book for today is called Host by Robin Cook. Dr. and author Robin Cook is widely credited with introducing the word medical to the thriller genre, and more than 30 years after the publication of his breakthrough novel, Coma, he continues to dominate the category he created. Cook has successfully combined medical fact with fantasy to produce a succession of numerous New York Times bestsellers that have been translated into over 40 languages. Now let's talk about Host. Lynn Pierce, a fourth-year medical student at South Carolina's Mason-Dixon University, thinks she has her life figured out. But when her otherwise healthy boyfriend, Carl, enters the hospital for routine surgery, her neatly ordered life is thrown into total chaos. Carl fails to return to consciousness after the procedure, and an MRI confirms brain death. Devastated by Carl's condition, Lynn searches for answers. Convinced there's more to the story than what the authorities are willing to reveal, Lynn uses all her resources at Mason-Dixon, including her initially reluctant lab partner, Michael Pender, to hunt down evidence of medical error or malpractice. Now, what she uncovers, however, is far more disturbing. Hospitals associated with Middleton Healthcare, including the Mason-Dixon Medical Center, have unnervingly high rates of unexplained anesthetic complications and patients contracting serious and terminal illness in the wake of routine hospital admissions. When Lynn and Michael begin to receive death threats, they know they're into something bigger than either of them anticipated. They soon enter a desperate race against time for answers before shadowy forces behind Middleton Healthcare and their partner, Sidereal Pharmaceuticals, can put a stop to their efforts once and for all. And that book is called Host, and it was written by Robin Cook. That sounds like a good one, too. Now let's move on to one of my favorite mystery writers and one who is mentioned frequently on this program. Of course, it's Mary Higgins Clark. And the book we're going to talk about here is called The Melody Lingers On. This novel by Mary Higgins Clark opens with 30-year-old Elaine Marcia Lane Harmon on her way to work in New York City. Now, she is a widow and the mother of 5-year-old Katie, who is going to start kindergarten. When Lane graduated from college, she didn't want to be a teacher, so she enrolled in the Fashion Institute of Technology and got a job as a decorator-designer. On this day, Lane is greeted by her boss, Glady Harper, with the news that they may have a new client. Well, sort of new client. 10 years ago, Lane did the interior design on a mansion in Greenwich when Parker Bennett bought it. The new job is not for Bennett, who has disappeared with billions of dollars he has stolen from investors in his business, but for his wife, Anne. No one is sure if he is dead or alive. Anne hired Glady and Lane to decorate the condominium that she has bought in New Jersey, and her son Eric called to make the arrangements. Well, he wants the job done for free because his father spent so much money on the mansion in Greenwich. Glady surprises Lane and agrees to do this deal. They help Anne decide which of her furnishings would fit well into her new townhouse. When Lane asks how Glady expects to cover the expenses, she says they'll bury the costs in the account of Countess de La Marco, another client who seems to have a fortune to spend. Soon Eric is on the scene with a keen eye for Lane. The two start seeing each other, and in a short time Eric declares his love for Lane. She knows that the FBI and other law enforcement officials think that Eric was in cahoots with his father in draining the life savings from the many people who invested with Bennett. Readers may also question if Eric is indeed the kind and innocent man he shows to the public. Clark keeps readers in the dark about Bennett for a little while before she unveils him in the Caribbean. He has a disguise of sorts, a fake English accent, and doesn't get too friendly with his neighbors. But he has more than his share of troubles in addition to staying under the police radar. He is being blackmailed by the Countess, who could and would blow the whistle on him in the flash of an eye. When Bennett talks to the Countess, he realizes how vulnerable he is with her on his trail. She is the only one who knows he's alive and where he is. He decides he must go to Switzerland and use the fake IDs he has with him. Meanwhile, back in the States, Anne and Eric continue on their crusade to prove that Bennett is innocent. Eric, too, is trying to prove himself innocent because of all the bad press and gossip that he's being thrown at him. The decorating job continues in the background, and Lane is getting more and more drawn into the lives of the two remaining Bennetts. She doesn't have an inkling that she has put herself and her daughter in danger. Now, fans of Mary Higgins Clark can feel certain that The Melody Lingers On is as good as her best books, and newcomers will find a treasure in the narrative and imagination of the Queen of Suspense. That was a review, by the way, written by Barbara Gershenbaum in July of 2015. And I can tell, I have read this one, and it is a good one. It's called The Melody Lingers On by Mary Higgins Clark. The next book we're going to look at is called The Liar by Nora Roberts. Shelby Foxworth lost her husband, then she lost her illusions. The man who took her from Tennessee to an exclusive Philadelphia suburb left her in crippling debt. He was an adulterer and a liar, and when Shelby tracks down his safe deposit box, she finds multiple IDs. The man she loved wasn't just dead. He never really existed. Shelby takes her 3-year-old daughter and heads south to seek comfort in her hometown, where she meets someone new, Griff Lott, a successful contractor. But her husband had secrets she has yet to discover. Even in this small town surrounded by loved ones, danger is closer than she knows and threatens Griff as well. And an attempted murder is only the beginning. That book is called The Liar by the very great storyteller Nora Roberts. Now we'll take a look at a book called Blood, Salt, Water. It's an Alex Morrow novel by Denise Mina, M-I-N-A. Detective Alex Morrow discovers that the darkest secrets never stay buried as she investigates the criminal underbelly of a seemingly tranquil seaside town. For reasons she can't quite explain, Alex Morrow is addicted to watching surveillance footage of Roxana Futenchila, a gorgeous Spanish mother of two in a tempestuous relationship with her boyfriend, who recently relocated to Glasgow under mysterious circumstances. She is also Morrow's prime suspect in an investigation that resembles a soap opera filled with glamorous jet-setters and enough money to interest the highest levels of law enforcement, until Roxana vanishes. Morrow traces Roxana's steps to Helensburg, a sleepy, picturesque seaside community. But behind the idyllic Victorian homes and quaint storefronts, darkness lurks. Home to a man with blood on his hands who is haunted by guilty, a mysterious woman with ulterior motives back in town. For the first time in decades, a sexually frustrated restaurateur looking to blow off steam, and a crew of vicious, small-time gangsters blindly following orders. It's a town ruled by base instincts where no one is quite what they seem. And it's the perfect place to get rid of someone. When she uncovers an unsettling connection to Roxana's job back in Glasgow, Morrow suspects that her missing person is more than a white-collar criminal on the lam. She may also be a victim caught up in a sophisticated conspiracy that stretches far beyond Helensburg and is more personal than Morrow ever imagined. As the truth rises to the surface and the conflicts that lie beneath Helensburg's calm waters threaten to explode, Morrow must find Roxana before any hope of solving the case disappears completely with her. And once again, that book was called Blood, Salt, and Water, an Alex Morrow novel by Denise Mina. Boy, these half-hour programs go by pretty fast, don't they? Especially when there's so many good books to talk about. Well, that's all for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, you can simply Google or search for North Carolina Library for the Blind, or you can call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. Again, that number is 1-888-388-2460. You can also use the same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And it's that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Thanks for joining me today, and so long until next time.